This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Got a couple developing stories here. The first is we're going to hear about some free agent visits. I'm guessing today for the Seattle Seahawks, we're expecting Damian Snacks Harrison to visit. That was something that was discussed last week. And also safety Demarius Randall, who is formerly of the Green Bay Packers, also scheduled for a visit. That comes from Mike Garafolo, and that probably relates to the availability or lack thereof of Jamal Adams, who suffered a groin strain. I would consider it a long shot for him, for Jordan Brooks, probably for Chris Carson. Damian Lewis, we'll see about him playing, but those other three guys, I'd be real surprised if we end up seeing him this week, Paul.
On the bright side, the upcoming schedule for Seattle, at least the next 2 weeks, and then, of course, the bye week, where you expect some of these guys to be back afterwards. You play the Dolphins on Sunday. I don't think you can exactly sleep on the Dolphins. They are, at the very least, scrappy. Then you will play a desperate Vikings team in Sunday night football action, and that game, I have no idea how that one will pan out, because there is something about Minnesota, Danny, I just cannot understand. I feel like they're better than that. But anyway, not the worst time to be going through injuries to the degree that Seattle is going through. They're going to need some of those bodies back for what will likely be a healthy San Francisco team at the beginning of November, along with the Bills and Rams and the Cardinals, to open up that month.
The other thing that's happening this morning is that we're seeing the NFL reacting to a potential outbreak of COVID among one of its teams. Up to 9 members of the Tennessee Titans have tested positive. We're not sure if they're coaches or players. I've seen some different reports. We know that their defensive play caller had a positive test before their game against the Vikings. The Titans have been sent home from their facilities. Everybody's working remotely. Same for the Vikings, who were their opponent on Sunday. All of their personnel has also been sent home. This is sort of an isolation to try and stem any potential outbreak while guys get tested. There are nobody that's tested positive from Minnesota that we know of yet. As of right now, those teams are proceeding as if they're going to play on Sunday. Pittsburgh, who is scheduled to play the Titans, have said that they're proceeding ahead as if the game will be played until they hear from the NFL. But we're seeing the NFL react to it. Nobody should be freaked out that, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. There were going to be positive tests. Like this, what we're seeing is how the NFL, can the NFL stop the spread before it transfers from one organization to another, and how deeply it goes into a team once the virus sort of does enter the environment of the locker room, of the team, that players and personnel who are trying to stay healthy, one of them ends up getting and testing positive for the virus.
This news today isn't great, but Danny, I've been pretty pleased with how things have gone, both in training camp and in the regular season. This seemed like an impossible task compared to any other sport without a bubble and with as many players and coaches and all those different members of team staffs. And this is really the first, I guess, crisis that we are seeing. And it really only seems like it is centered around one team as opposed to the team that Tennessee just played, the Minnesota Vikings.
So we'll kind of watch and see how many Titans players end up testing positive or personnel, and then also see if it is passed to the team that they played on Sunday, the Minnesota Vikings. Monday night game, we saw it was supposed to be the matchup of, I would consider, the two favorites, the two Super Bowl favorites entering the season. Kansas City was the odds-on favorite to repeat, and I think Baltimore was considered the second-best team in the league, coming off a year in which they won 14 games and had the reigning NFL regular season MVP in Lamar Jackson, and it wasn't much of a contest. And the reason that that is specifically interesting is Baltimore plays like the team that Seattle wanted to be previously. It kind of plays according to Pete Carroll's approach of have great special teams, have a physical run game, look for big plays, no, don't be conservative, and then play sort of rattle your fillings defense. Like that's how Pete would prefer to play. That's what he thinks is the most effective formula. It's really how Baltimore thinks it plays right now. And yesterday they looked absolutely outmatched. They were at home against Kansas City, and Patrick Mahomes basically did donuts in their front lawn.
Yeah. What's the quote from Dirty Harry? They had the 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, blowing your head clean off. And Kansas City's offense looked like it had not honestly looked to this point in the year. This was their best performance. Patrick Mahomes was making underhanded passes. He was making jumping pump fakes. He was doing the things that made us think that he was the best quarterback in the league last year. I know that there are some who were getting frustrated that Mahomes is all of a sudden getting praised again. But yeah, they were outmatched. And Baltimore's offense just doesn't seem like it's one that's going to lend itself to success this year. Seattle's offense does. Kansas City's offense does. These teams that can open it up and throw it, the Packers, these teams I think are going to be in for a lot of success. And okay, if you don't have the guns, do you have the defense that's going to make stops? It seems like, and we brought this up just a second ago, like Pittsburgh is really the only one that it feels like has been successful defensively, and they're blitzing up a storm.
They are.
Is that how teams should be approaching this year? Just go all in, gamble, go big, hope that you make a play, and just know that you're probably going to give up some big plays along the way?
There are a couple different explanations that you could use to why our offense is different this year. One is this is continuing the trend, right? We've seen a shift to more pass-oriented offenses increasingly over the past 20 years. This is just the logical extension of that. The second part is that, hey, there's something unique about this season, about the lack of an off-season training regimen, about the lack of preseason games, and that usually we say defenses are ahead of offenses in training camp, and it certainly appears so far that the offenses are ahead of the defenses.
Really far.
This would kind of undermine that whole approach, and to say the third possibility is that it's the actual environment of the game. That the lack of fans and the logistics of how games are played right now is such that it favors offenses, mm-hmm. which you could see. You can communicate better pre-snap. Even home teams are able to communicate better pre-snap, and there's no better example than the past two games. We saw Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers draw false starts from defenses in visiting stadiums. That would never happen. That would never. You could not use a hard count to draw an opponent offsides for the simple fact that they would not be able to hear you because their crowd would be so loud. He drew the Saints offsides in New Orleans.
Rodgers is so obnoxious. I don't know why I said it like that, with the offsides that he is able to draw. And
yeah,
you're right.
I hate it.
This year, he's going to kill multiple teams with this. And then he just throws up the shot play, and then he does his little passive-aggressive, you know, comments after the game. Ugh, he's the worst. And this is going to help him out. It's going to help Patrick Mahomes out. It's going to help any great quarterback out this year. And it's very, very good that the Seahawks have the quarterback that they do, because this is video game year. This is the year where you are essentially going to play to outscore the opponent as opposed to get stops, and you are just praying that your defense does anything along the way. To Seattle's credit, while they have given up a lot of yards, they have forced takeaways. Four interceptions is tied for third in the NFL. They have at the very least sort of gotten after the quarterback, though the sacks have not quite come there. But the rest of the defense, yeah, it's what it is.
So the Seahawks picked the right time to switch the emphasis, right? Like, they picked the perfect year to stop insisting on establishing the run early in games and trying to muck up the flow, to shorten the game, to get it to the fourth quarter. They picked the right year to sort of unveil and focus upon what seems to be the ticket to success this year, even more so than other years, which is you got a great quarterback. Let him ease back the most any restrictions you have on him. Give him the most freedom. Give him the most latitude, give him the widest berth to be able to influence the score of the game, the outcome of the game. Put as much as you can in his hands.
Right. And I wonder if, since we're seeing this across the league a bit with multiple teams, if there will be an adjustment, if there will be a correction. Because generally the NFL does a very good job of correcting itself. And one would think that that will also happen when multiple teams on a regular basis are going up against these pass-happy attacks, right?
Yes. I wondered if the Ravens tried to do it last night. The Ravens blitzed him a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, the Ravens blitz a lot in general. The Ravens have a fairly complicated defense. The Ravens like to bring pressure. Mahomes destroyed their blitzes.
Yeah, he was good. And his mobility, it's not talked about enough. His mobility is really impressive, whether it's, again, doing a jump pump fake, which, you know, generally...
Isn't that traveling?
That's traveling in the NBA, not in
right?
the NFL.
Like,
but that's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, can you leave your feet on a jump? Like, that doesn't seem fair.
It doesn't, but he's able to do it. And we saw with that touchdown run he had against Tennessee in the AFC Championship game, you give that guy a little bit of space, he will beat you. He will beat you to the corner. He will get the necessary yardage. And it's why he is on the same level as Russell Wilson, as one of the two best quarterbacks in the game.
Yeah, it's so interesting and so weird to watch it, because it does challenge some of the very basic things that I've thought about football, which is that, hey, if you've got a pass-heavy offense, if you're looking to throw the ball 50 times a game, that's all great. But eventually you're going to come run into someone that can stop you, and once that happens, you might not have any answers. You might not have any alternatives. And now I look at it and say, well, if you want to have a balanced offense, you've got to be able to play defense. And if you just want to throw the ball, I don't know if it matters if you play defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you might come up snake eyes one time. Like, that might happen. But if you can throw the ball, you can overcome so much more by just throwing the ball a ton than if you're wanting to say, like, we want to play complementary football. Like, just say, like, okay, yeah, we're going to have a higher boom bust rate, but we think we're going to win more bigger this way because we're just going to care about throwing the ball and we're not really going to worry about our defense.
Forgive me for the Madden comparison. Sometimes when you play Madden, you'll go up against somebody who decides, I hate defense. I don't think I know how to play defense. So I am just going to run punt block every single
yes.
time against your offense, hoping that my 10-man rush is going to create at the very least one miscue, which will allow my offense, which I assume will score every single drive, to win. Is this the approach that teams should be taking? Should teams all be blitzing more? It's clearly working out for Pittsburgh, who has played a bunch of bums before the Texans. They played the Giants. They played...
Can I offer a clarify? I don't think it's a bunch of bums before the Texans. I think it's just a bunch of bums.
I think that the Texans at the very least have Deshaun Watson. But you had Drew Locke and you had
the
Daniel
Texans
Jones
are 0 and 3. The Texans
enough,
are 0 and 3 and they're a bunch of bums.
And don't get it twisted. I'm thankful I'm away from those people. Those are three teams that you go up against. One of them has a competent quarterback, and the other two, it was Daniel Jones, it was Drew Locke. Is that something that's sustainable, say Pittsburgh goes up against Kansas City, say they go up against a team like Seattle or a team like Green Bay? Is that actually something that'll work? Because thus far, they've clearly been, I think, the best defense in the NFL. TJ Watt's playing at a great level. Bud Dupree off the edge has been really good. And I've read, at the very least, and heard via podcast, their secondary maybe isn't as good in coverage as it was last year after they added Minkah Fitzpatrick, which seems consistent with just about every single team across the NFL defensively. I think right now the only thing, Danny, that we have as a possible solution to stopping these offensive onslaughts is to blitz and blitz and blitz some more.
And it looked like last night that did not get the Baltimore Ravens anywhere from the 206.
No.
Here's the problem. If we need Russell to perform at an all-time high level to overcome our defense, eventually that stops working. I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure that's true. It can, and they won't go undefeated playing that way. But look at the rest of the NFC and tell me if you don't feel that Seattle's in the best shape and the best position. They're in a great division, but they're undefeated, and they haven't played well at all. They've been historically bad on defense. Like, do you think the defense won't get better from what it is right now? I think it has to get better from what it is.
Assuming no more injuries, yes, it should. That's the problem. They keep on getting hurt there. But I also am under the assumption that the offense is not going to let up either, barring injuries. And last year, if you take a look at the differences in Russell Wilson's splits between when they had Will Disley and after Will Disley, it's striking. It can drop a completion percentage of about 10%. They have two tight ends. They have two wide receivers. And honestly, in Carlos Hyde, I think that they have a pretty capable replacement in the short term for Chris Carson. So I'm expecting a lot more of the same to continue. The health thing, that's the big problem right now.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Good evening, exceptional guest.
Ghost. Happy Tuesday, everybody.
I'm gonna miss doing that.
I know. You should still do it to DJ. Just call him Jess. It'll be fun. I'm just kidding. You can do DJ that
DJ.
Way. Like, not the same ring.
Yeah.
No. Well, in what we thought might be a shootout on Monday Night Football, the Chiefs soundly defeated the Ravens last night, 34-20.
I'm annoyed that their defense can continue to bray and chirp as if it's one of the better defenses in the NFL because the Ravens have no wide receivers and no ability to throw the football.
Yeah. But they're winning. It is a chippy defense.
They had a couple really good pass rushes. Like, there was one where it was Frank Clark in 94 kind of came out wide and they pinched Lamar Jackson in. It was really well done. I don't think their defense is very good, but I actually thought they played pretty well last night.
Yeah, it's hard to keep that guy in check. And
yeah,
for whatever reason,
200 yards total offense for them, 75 yards passing.
They've made him look flustered the last few times they played. Now, the last time around, Lamar Jackson had a couple of just pulling it out of his butt plays. That was towards the beginning. I think it was like week two, week three of last season where he was just throwing the ball straight up in the air and some of his players were making incredible plays. But yeah, there was none of that last night. And there is a blueprint out to stop Lamar Jackson, and I love Lamar Jackson. Really, he's one of my favorite players to watch, but when you can execute that blueprint, man, he looks shaky, and unlike Mahomes and Wilson and Rodgers, there's no adjustment. What do you do if you're Baltimore and all of a sudden that running game is taken away?
Yeah, they kind of freak out, and I think they abandon the run too quick because it's an explosive run game, but yeah. You can kind of see him panic a little bit. You can.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll see what happens the rest of the way, but we're about to see, I think, the same kind of anti-Lamar Jackson slander that we have seen for Dak Prescott and other quarterbacks that are close but not quite at the top level of quarterbacks.
Well, speaking of top-level quarterbacks, in that game we saw Patrick Mahomes become the fastest player in history to reach 10,000 passing yards.
He's going to rewrite pretty much every record. I think with the way the game's played today, the coach he has, and the way he runs that offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not the last time we're going to hear he's the first to such and such plateau.
And someone else will rewrite his records probably eventually too, don't you think?
Do they count it games played or time in the league? Because he went for a full season without playing.
That's a good question. I don't know.
I would guess it's games played. It should be time
in the
year.
It should be games played. I think it should be games played, right?
Really? No.
Yeah.
You give Aaron Rodgers 3 years of apprenticeship, so then he starts and you're like, he's the fastest such and such. He's been in the league for a long time.
But he's an old man, and that'll ultimately affect his all-time numbers, doesn't it?
No, it's time on roster. It should be time on roster. I don't think it's time in game.
Okay. It's weird because we're never going to see a Rodgers type again, are we? Are we going to see somebody that sits for that long? And with Mahomes, I even wonder about that. Like, are we going to see someone just sit waiting in the wings behind a great quarterback that ultimately succeeds? Like, is Jordan, do we feel like Jordan Love's going to do that? And Justin Herbert's already been thrown in there.
Wouldn't you look at Mahomes and Rodgers and say that's a great reason why you should be willing to sit him?
It is, but you also have to keep in mind general managers and coaches have jobs to save.
But that's like a pragmatic. If you were a smart person, because I don't think you should. I don't think you should make decisions based on saving your job.
I agree.
And if I was an owner, that would be sort of my. I would not want my GM and coach making decisions based on saving their job. I would want them making decisions based on the best long term interest of the team. You would look at Rodgers and Mahomes and say, "Hey, that certainly shows that there are benefits to it." It's not the only way. Russell Wilson shows that you can play right off the bat, too. But it would make me more willing to do it. And I think owners let GMs and coaches get ahead of themselves.
Maybe Sam Darnold could have used that.
Darnold could use a different coach.
I think he needs a different team. That organization, it just did a horrible job of doing the right thing for him.
You can't, if you're the Jets, let him go without seeing what he's like without Gase. If only because of what Ryan Tannehill is.
Then fire him now.
Yes.
I mean, you have Greg Williams. He's been an interim coach before, no matter what you think of him. And he's been a successful interim coach.
Fire him now.
Yep. Toodaloo. See ya.
Well, former Seahawks wide receiver Jermaine Kearse announced his retirement from the NFL earlier today, and I thought we could relive at least one of our favorite memories.
Fourth and seven from the 35. Somebody steps into the neutral zone.
He's got a free play.
On the snap and a free play. Throws it for the end zone. Deep down to the back of the end zone. It is caught for a touchdown. Are you kidding me? What a catch, Jermaine Kearse.
Thought you'd want to remember that one from the NFC Championship game.
2013 NFC Championship game. Fourth and seven. Russell gets him off sides.
Free
Absolute
play.
Absolute dagger. Dude, Jermaine had some clutch catches for this franchise.
Is what plays more your favorite? And I think a lot of people would say Richard Sherman, the interception, the rant. But if I had to pick between the two, which one got me more giddy? The Jermaine Kearse catch down the middle of the field, but the way that the Packers had the lead in that game and with the comeback that Seattle had to make, Russell Wilson throwing four interceptions, I think that that moment I enjoyed a little bit more than the Richard Sherman interception.
I like the Sherman interception.
I do too. Don't get me wrong.
But I can see the argument for Kearse. Russell had been picked off four times, was possibly concussed according to the Stecker theory. Jermaine Kearse had been the target on each of those four interceptions. Two of them had gone off his hands. And then you have this game over baby moment. It's still the tip. It's still the tip. Just the tip by Sherman. But I can't say you're wrong about Kearse's catch against the Packers.
It's also so cool to see somebody who grew up, played college in, and then played professionally all in the same city. I mean,
yes.
You do not see that very often at all. And for that guy to win a Super Bowl, essentially, for you by getting you there and of course, making all those clutch catches that he has made, man, I'm really happy for him that he gets to walk off and have all of these memories that he has shared with us here in Seattle. It's very cool.
Nick Foles will be your week four starter for the Bears, and they will be without running back Tariq Cohen, who has a confirmed torn ACL. But according to Jim Nagy, he is the starting quarterback moving forward.
I think it's going to work out. They're 3-0. Isn't it the most undeserved 3-0 in the NFL? I'm annoyed that they're 3-0. In fact, they benched their quarterback and are still 3-0. What malarkey.
It's great. I love it when these sort of things happen.
No, it's bad.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
At least they had the stones to do it, though.
I know, and I give them credit, but then that also makes the point of what was he doing there to begin with. If that's how little confidence you had in him, that's how little belief, that's how much you expected this. Because this is not a case where Mitchell Trubisky has looked great and this year's been inexplicably bad. This has been a confirmation of what everybody's seen for a year and a half. That's what we're watching. And they benched him without losing a game. It's hilarious. It is hilarious. This is how terrible organizations are run. This is
by the way,
bad
Matt
organizational
Nagy,
decision. Yes.
I said Jim, my bad.
No, it's no worries.
Should more teams be willing to do these really difficult decisions while winning? And I'll go and point to a couple of random examples that I've always thought of with coaching. I've always wondered the what if Bruce Arians ended up getting the head coaching gig ahead of Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis after Pagano had to take the leave for cancer. That would have been a really unpopular move to make. And I also wonder right now in Atlanta what they would be right now should Kyle Shanahan have stayed there and Dan Quinn have been supplanted. And look, I think you can go back and forth as to who deserves blame for the Super Bowl 51 loss. I think it's partly on Shanahan, but I also think it's on Quinn. Like, Quinn, you gotta call your dog off. You gotta tell him, hey, let's just get the field goal and get the two-score lead.
Let's talk about Dan Quinn, because he's someone who can be referenced here. We've discussed a little bit Seattle's defense and just what his future means. That's coming up next here on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Dan Quinn is someone who is very fondly remembered here, a guy who served two different stints on the Seattle Seahawks coaching staff and was the defensive coordinator when they went to back-to-back Super Bowls, winning one of them. He's hot water doesn't describe the situation down in Arizona right now. The Falcons are 0-3 after an awful start last season that they survived with a furious finish. Atlanta blew a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter in week two against Dallas. That was capped off by a pretty inexplicable onside kick. Then the Falcons said, here, hold my beer, and blew a 16-point fourth quarter lead this past week to the Fightin' Foles of Chicago. They lost to a team that they led by 16 points that was so underwhelming they changed quarterbacks mid-game.
They're too talented to be 0-3, but they are. And, you know, in a year, Danny, we've talked about how offenses this year are going to carry you. They're 0-3 despite Matt Ryan, despite Julio Jones, despite Calvin Ridley, despite Russell Gage, who at the very least the Seahawks made look good. And there's no excuse for that. Who does it fall on? I don't think it's entirely fair to put it all on Dan Quinn just because I think Matt Ryan's made some bad decisions and he throws a lot of interceptions in very untimely times. But this has been a symptom of Dan Quinn's team now since the Super Bowl that they lost. And I'm surprised that, honestly, after last year's awful start, he's still there. And now after this, what's the point of continuing to go forward, you know? Does it accomplish anything firing a coach? I'm not sure, but I don't also understand what you gain by letting him continue to coach it out when you gave him a second chance last year.
Yeah, and the secondary question to this, because a lot of people are looking for an answer, is, hey, would he fit here? Of course he would. Dan Quinn's a really good coach, and Dan Quinn's someone who has and all of the different – I don't know if it's going to line up that way. Even if you were to be fired mid-year, I don't think you're going to see a situation where he takes a job on someone else's staff right away. That's just not likely. But the question about Seattle's defense is a very valid one. We've watched now for several years as they've tried to transition to the post-Super Bowl defense era. And I don't think this is the responsibility of the defensive coordinator, because I think whoever coordinates Seattle's defense is running Pete Carroll's defense. However, it's very clear that how this defense is running is not getting notable improvement despite investing significant resources in it, whether it's draft picks, whether it's trades, or whether it's signings. Like, they've put an awful lot into getting dudes who can man up in this defense to make it better. And right now, what we have through 3 weeks is a historically porous passing defense. It's awful. Now, maybe it's going to get better because the first three quarterbacks they played, it's a pretty good lineup of Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, and then Dak Prescott. The next four they're going to play are not going to be nearly as good. Jimmy Garoppolo, Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. Kyler Murray's mixed in there, and he's been pretty good. Kirk Cousins. Like, that's not the same caliber of quarterbacks. But you got to do something to see improvement here, or you need to look at making wholesale changes to try to figure out a way to make this group more effective.
You've brought this up before, that it's Pete's defense, it's not Ken Norton Jr.'s defense. And I will fall in line with that line of thinking. And I also, okay, he's been the defensive coordinator since 2018. Have the results of young players not developing, has that been his fault? Has that been the fault of Pete Carroll maybe being less willing to put young players on the field? Has that been the fault of John Schneider maybe not bringing in the right guys? I don't know what the answer to that is. And the guys that have come in with Norton Jr. as defensive coordinator defensively, Rasheem Green, Shaquem Griffin, Trey Flowers, and Jacob Martin in 2018. Martin looked pretty good before you moved on from him. Last year, LJ Collier off to a good start. Marquise Blair lost for the year. Cody Barton, I thought he finished the season strong last season. Ugo Amadi looking pretty good. Ben Burke-Hervin in special teams looking good as well. Like, the results haven't been awful, I think, from those young players, but they haven't been on the field and they haven't been making enough of an impact, that's for sure.
Most passing yards allowed through three games in NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to a point where it doesn't matter why. You get to a point where it doesn't matter why, that it's you're not seeing growth and you're not seeing improvement on the players that are here. And that is the only charge of the coach. And one way or another, whether it's scheme or whether it's development of players, like something's not that there's been enough time that's been given. And last year was supposed to be the bottoming out and this was supposed to be the rebound. And okay, something needs to be done differently. You can't just keep staying the course when you get no returns from what you're seeing, when you're seeing no improvement, when you're seeing the same sort of things happen one way or the other, whether it's the scheme, whether it's the communication or whether it's the development of players, you're not seeing the progress that you absolutely have to see, especially when the other side of the ball looks like it's coming into its own.
Yeah.
You only need a nominal contribution. You only need to be average. That's all you need to be. Just give me average. Just give me average.
Could it be as simple as the personnel? Could it be that simple? And if that's the case, is that the fault of the coaching staff? And look, this year is unfortunate for the Seahawks in that their first two picks are now hurt. Jordan Brooks hurt. Daryl Taylor, I'm not sure we're going to see him this year. So that hurts a lot. I don't know if that's the fault of anybody there. But, I mean, Trey Flowers being out there, like, what coaching is going to make Trey Flowers better at cornerback if he's the guy that you're putting out there? With Shaquille Griffin, okay, I think there have been some signs of progress, at least as far as breaking on the ball and stuff, but he's still not the top-of-the-line corner that you want him to be.
I don't believe that the personnel is the reason why things have changed. I don't believe that a failure to bring in anybody, because when we've seen guys, when we've seen Amadi play, when we've seen Marquise Blair play, haven't we all looked at it and said, like, oh, guy, that guy looks pretty good? Trey Flowers, I mean, Flowers is a fifth-round pick who's a safety who was brought in there that they thought they had something.
Right.
His development is still, that's not a decision where you're like, okay, this is an evaluation problem. He's a fifth-round pick.
Right.
If he never plays a down, that's not a problem in personnel evaluation.
But he's a fifth-round pick that used to play safety that's playing corner for you now, you know? And the results haven't been good.
That's a draft and develop problem, though, right? That's not a personnel selection. That's not a, hey, these guys don't know what they're doing when they pick out the players. That's, he hasn't developed from where he was. He hasn't gotten better from where he was.
Right. And look, don't get me wrong. The draft and development side of it is a part of it. But isn't it also, after a certain point when you've seen enough from a guy, isn't it also, hey, you're continuing to put this guy out there? So I guess maybe personnel's not the correct way to phrase it. Is it just usage? Are you using Trey Flowers properly? Should you be still using Trey Flowers either?
That's a coaching issue, right?
Yes.
And who does that on?
Is that Pete or is that Ken Norton Jr.? Honestly, something tells me it's Pete, but I could be wrong on that. I don't know the answer to that one.
And at some point, that points to the fact that you need either a stronger, different voice in there or a different framework for things. That you need that there needs to be some sort of change to that. You're not going to change your head coach. You're not. But getting a stronger, different voice in there is something. If this defense doesn't improve, that you need to look at. You're not seeing the improvement that you need to see from it.
Is Dan Quinn or Gus Bradley type that different voice though? I mean, it's voices you're used to. Is it a new line of thinking that they're bringing in?
Certainly, those guys have both run and developed their own programs. Certainly, they're not the same coaches,
and they've learned new things probably.
That have their own style and their own approach and would be more likely to bring it. There are also guys that certainly coach in the same vein that Pete does, but I don't think this is a problem of needing a fire and brimstone or needing some sort of hard case to come
Show
in
judge.
There and set things down. I don't think that coach works in Pete's system. It'll be interesting to see. I don't want to draw any hard and fast conclusions because I don't think what Seattle's defense has been over the first 3 weeks is necessarily the indicator for what it will be 2-3 months from now.
Certainly not promising, though.
It's you look at it and you wonder exactly what's happening, because what we thought was going to be the strength of this defense, which is the secondary, has not been that at all. It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Try to make sense of the previous 3 hours. It's our opportunity to try and do that. I think we're up to the task today. I think we're ready to go.
Let's go.
Paul, would you like to start?
Yeah. First off, you have to be an insane person, I think, to volunteer to help someone move. But I want to give a hearty raise of the flag and a hug to Boy Howdy, who decided to volunteer to help me move over the weekend from Capitol Hill to Ballard. Thank you. And by the way, moving is difficult, in case you don't know that. But, man, I can't believe you volunteered to help me. Second off, more importantly, I want to raise a flag to Jermaine Kearse. How often do you see a guy born in the area, going to high school in the area, going to college in the area, playing professionally in the area, help win the hometown team a Super Bowl and get the hometown team to another Super Bowl? And that's what we got with Jermaine Kearse, who I think had a really memorable career with the Seahawks, known for some big-time catches in big-time moments, whether it was to win the NFC Championship game to get Seattle to Super Bowl 49, or just an insane catch that he made in Super Bowl 49.
Danny Wilson fires inside, and Kearse makes the catch, spins out of one, spins out of two, 10, 5, touchdown, Seahawks! They are blowing the roof off this place in New Jersey. Jermaine Kearse, a 23-yard slant, breaks two tackles and takes it in.
He made
four
big
dudes. Yeah, four dudes touched him that play and he got in.
Incredible. I mean, the guy just made big-time plays and big-time moments. He retired officially from the NFL today, and I think everyone in Seattle owes him a hearty send-off. Congratulations on a great career, Jermaine, and I'm very excited to see what you do next.
Well said. I will follow that up because I'm throwing a flag on anybody who's ever said anything nasty about Jermaine Kearse. You know you're out there. If you complained about his drops in college, if you complained about his drops in the pros, never has a person achieved so much at every level in a single state and still had haters. And all of you haters, I hate you. If you're a Jermaine Kearse hater, I hate you. Hate you. It's the thing, and I'm not exactly, drives me the most.
I hate you.
Nuts.
I hate you.
Seriously. Like when you're like, oh, Jermaine Kearse is over. Really? He's overrated. He was an undrafted player who has three most important catches in franchise history. Shut your pie hole. I hate you. So that's where my flag is thrown on, is all on Jermaine Kearse's. I'm hating the haters.
By the way, I'm going to ignore a certain catch that Jermaine Kearse had in college. Gonna ignore it. Didn't happen.
Oh, did he have one against Syracuse?
No.
Jake Locker?
No. Didn't he have one against the team I'm wearing the t-shirt of?
Yeah. Oh, 2010 Apple Cup?
Yeah.
He's not unique in that regard, Paul. You're gonna have to disregard an awful lot of highlights if you're gonna not recognize Husky.
It's our year.
Husky success.
It's our year. Seven games, man. That's the key. Seven games. Roll low for Prez.
You just put that one on a T, man.
Yeah. They're going to have to narrow it down. Jessamine.
I'm going to raise a flag for Brock Heward, which is probably the most unique compliment that I've ever gotten earlier today. Compared me to a former teammate of his.
Hey, that's good, Danny. Hey, can I say one more thing? And just to Jess, and I don't know if this is out of school or out of turn, but I saw her tweet yesterday. And let me just say to Jessamine McTyre, there has been no better teammate, no more of a bulldog that will have your back at all costs, that believes in you and the people around you, and just makes, you know, everybody better around you, as Jess did and has done for 11 years. And so excited for your next venture, Jess. But I've said before, like, Olin Krutz was my favorite football teammate because he'd go at the neck of anybody that tried to come against you. Jessamine, you have much the same as a radio teammate and a partner in this. Like, don't you dare come at anybody on my team, or I'm going to Olin Krutz you and come right at you, Jess. So
that is probably the highest praise I could possibly receive. I am Olin Krutz.
Yes.
I'm going to get an okay tattoo.
Yeah, but you haven't hit anybody in the jaw or broke jaws behind the scenes, but you certainly have.
You would.
Just figuratively.
You've inspired people. You've encouraged people. You've built people up. You've been an unbelievable teammate for a long time, Jess.
That was actually really nice. I just truly took a lot of pride in the fact that he compared me to an offensive lineman who's broken jaws of two of his teammates. But yeah, you know, we kind of said earlier today, I'm leaving for Q13 and tomorrow's my last day. And I want to raise a flag for all of you guys and all the love you've shown me.
It's going to be
miss
more.
You,
and yeah, we really are.
I'm really excited for you too, though.
Thank you.
Same.
DJ!
I would like to raise a flag to Miami Heat coach Eric Spoelstra, because when you're the head coach for LeBron James, you're instantly on the hot seat. And the fact that he was just disregarded as a bad coach and he was going to be shortly fired after LeBron left back to Cleveland. Just want to point out that he's won at least 40 games in four of the last 5 years, and he's built a culture there. He's really the Pete Carroll of the NBA. He's always had this culture that's sustainable. And was also questioned, just like Pete Carroll, when all these good players leave, what are you going to do? Well, they're back in the NBA Finals. And I know this isn't his quote. He's not the owner of this quote, but he did say this in a press conference. And I want to end with this. Everyone overestimates what you can do in a day and underestimates what you can do over the course of months or a year, which is what you can see in his philosophy and how he's built his culture.
It's one of the better phrases about how you affect change. Everybody thinks they can do more than they can do in one day, and everybody underestimates what you can do in a year. It's great, great. Plus, he's the pride of University of Portland. He's a pilot, right?
Yes, Jimmy Butler wore his jersey the other day when they were celebrating.
Pretty hilarious. That's going to do it for us. A very fun show. I don't know if we fixed any of the problems Seattle has, but I think we got to the bottom of it. The defense just doesn't matter, not in 2020.
Yeah, just forget about defense. Score all the points.
Yes, play pinball.
40 burgers.
We are going to have a very, very special show tomorrow. I would encourage everybody to tune in as we wish a fond farewell and salute to more than a decade of service at 710 ESPN Seattle for Jessamyn McIntyre. Want to thank Brock Heward, the professor, John Clayton, for joining us today. Jess is our sun, who we orbit around and sheds light on everything. DJ is the moon, because he's kind of shiny. And, yeah, there's different shades. I have no idea where it's going.
Keep going. No, keep going. I want it more.
And he's Paul, and you can find him on Uranus.
Ha! Got him. And he's Danny O'Neill. And he didn't even remind me that in my college haze of Jermaine Kearse against Syracuse University, 9 catches, 179 yards, and a career-high 3 touchdowns on September 11th of 2010 against my Orange. Holy crap. Glad I forgot about that one.
That game resulted in Greg Bishop, who's now at Sports Illustrated, jogging around a block in Seattle wearing pink pants. Mm. Pink khakis, because he lost a bet to me over that game.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. So long. Farewell. Tune in tomorrow as we say goodbye to Jess and have a wonderful Tuesday.
It was just so much fun.